Does Joe know something we don't know? Hello, everyone. I'm Trish Regan. Welcome to the Trish Intel Show. And President Biden, once again, misspeaking. And once again, calling Kamala Harris his vice president. President Harris, listen.
Now, when President Harris and I took a virtual tour of a vaccination center in Arizona not long ago.
President Harris and I, like I said, does he know something we don't know? I mean, I guess in all fairness, it was Harris that called the world leaders once they both got to the Oval Office, right? No, but in all seriousness, I understand that sometimes people misspeak. He clearly has a habit of doing this over and over and over again. You've heard the sound. We've played it for you before. But what I find troubling now is that he keeps misspeaking. And it's one thing to call her President Harris. It's another thing entirely to pitch the idea that somehow no one making more than $400,000 is going to see a tax increase, right? In fact, that's what he promised in his interview just on Sunday with George Stephanopoulos.
Yes, anybody making more than $400,000 will see a small to a significant tax increase. If you make less than $400,000, you won't see one single penny in additional federal tax.
But then his press person had to come in for the cleanup act, Jen Psaki, saying, no. Actually, it's anybody who earns more than $200,000 a year that would be affected. Therefore, if a family earns more than $400,000 because each person is earning $200,000, or maybe one person earns $300,000 and the other earns $100,000, well, then your taxes are going to go up. You know, don't get me started because we'll be here all day and all night if we start talking about how anti-American this is and how anti-growth it is. You've heard me say that, and I'll do that again for you another time. I just want to get back to the fact that this guy doesn't know what end is up. He is the president of the United States. He calls Kamala Harris President Harris, and he can't articulate whether it's $200,000 or $400,000, at which point you would see a tax hike. This is messed up. All right? I understand he's older. I understand he misspeaks. I understand it may not even, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe it has nothing to do with how much is going on upstairs, the fact that he calls her President Harris, but he clearly does not know his own darn tax policy. And that is troubling. Okay, coming up, we're going to talk a little more about Jen Psaki because she's really having to clean up a whole lot these days. I want to know, what's such a big deal about the word crisis? Crisis, right? We have a crisis at our border, yet none of them will admit it. That's next.
Were there expectations set with the Mexicans that they helped deal with the situation on the border?
There have been expectations set outside of unrelated to any vaccine doses or requests for them that they would be partners in dealing with the crisis on the border.
Whoa. Wait a second. Did she say what we think she said? The crisis on the border, crisis, C-R-I-S-I-S spells crisis. Wow, she's actually finally admitting it, what we all know, right? Oh, but only for so long, because within minutes, another reporter came in to help her correct herself on her misuse of terminology. Listen.
When you were talking a moment ago about diplomatic negotiations between the United States and Mexico, you said crisis on the border. Was that a
challenges on the border?
Nope. No change. We're sticking with our just challenges on the border. What is it about this word crisis that has them so freaked out and so concerned? I mean, the Department of Homeland Security secretary is out there saying this is the worst it's been in 20 years, yet they will not admit that this is a crisis. You know, what is a crisis? A crisis is when something gets so bad that it's important there be some kind of breakthrough, right? Because you need some kind of important change to take place because something is reaching a tipping point effectively. It's a time of intense difficulty, intense trouble, or danger. Like when you talk about an economic crisis, we had an economic crisis as a result of the pandemic. Well, right now, we have a border crisis. The most number of people are coming through, according to Biden's own DHS, in 20 years. We have children, thousands of children that are coming unaccompanied, unaccompanied minors, and we're putting them in, dare I say, cages, right? Wait, that was a term that was just used for the previous administration, despite the fact that those were the same facilities used during Barack Obama's presidency and they're the same facilities being used now. Listen, this is a crisis. This is a mess. And something needs to be done. But here we are fighting over words. Come on, guys. Give me a break. You know, I did a little bit of research on this word, and it's interesting. It became far more popular between 1950 and now. If you go back over 1850, 1900, 1800, you know, it actually was not used that much, not until after the 50s, going into the 60s and beyond, which is kind of amazing because we did have a few crises, as in World War I and World War II way back then. But somehow this word was not as used. So maybe there's someone in the administration that's a real purist that wants to go back to 1800 with their language. I don't know. But look, I just call it like I see it. And what I see is, in fact, a crisis. And the sooner they admit to that, the sooner that they just own it, the more we can address it and fix it and be honest with each other, okay, about how this needs to change, especially at a time when we're trying to get everybody vaccinated and we're trying to make sure everybody's safe in this country. Why are we opening up the border to let thousands more in? It's a crisis. You spell it C-R-I-S-I-S. Just admit it. Okay, coming up, Wokeville, USA, a Chicago suburb is going to give Black residents that qualify reparations of at least $25,000 each. I'll explain next. An affluent Chicago suburb is on track to become the first city in the country to give Black residents reparations. But according to some community leaders, these reparations of $25,000 each, not enough. Evanston, Illinois is establishing a reparations program. It actually began back in 2019. They started saving money with a $10 million fund that they raised as a result of a 3% tax on recreational marijuana sales. I mean, got to have the money go somewhere, right? And so soon they're going to be giving out $25,000 to every qualifying Black resident. Now, the program hopes to address housing inequity by providing Blacks with grants to assist with homeownership, mortgage assistance, or other home improvement projects that they might want to do in an effort to help address policies, they say, from the past, to right the wrongs of the past. Because in Evanston, Illinois, between 1919 and 1969, a lot of Black families were discriminated against in housing policies because they had housing policies that included redlining, prevented people that were Black from buying homes in some of the best neighborhoods. And so as a result, Evanston's saying, listen, if you or any of your relatives lived in Evanston between 1919 and 1969, then you qualify. Here's $25,000 to put to your house. Now, what's interesting is that not everybody thinks it's enough. In fact, a lot of the activists that have been pushing this are saying, look, you know, it's just a drop in the bucket. Direct quote, Michael Neighbors, he's the president of the Evanston NAACP. He's telling Newsweek, this is a drop in the bucket. When it's all said and done, he says, however much money is raised for reparations will only be a drop in the bucket for the oppression that Black people experienced in this nation. Fifth Ward Alderman Robin Ruth Simmons, she also has been very instrumental in the creation of the Evanston program, and she agrees. She says, look, you know, this is effectively not enough. I'm going to quote, we're fully aware that this initiative is not full repair to Black residents. She says it's going to take a passage of H.R. 40 as well. Now, H.R. 40 is legislation that was recently introduced, you'll recall, by Sheila Jackson, the representative to the U.S. Congress, Democrat out of Texas. And Sheila Jackson wants to study this issue of reparations. Of course, the federal government, meanwhile, Joe Biden saying we don't even need to study it. We know that we need to do something. He's actually said he's committed to moving forward on reparations and may even act ahead of any congressional studies to address the issue of inequality. In the meantime, Evanston is doing its own thing going forward with this plan, $25,000 for every Black resident that qualifies. Okay, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about this market. Treasuries are moving up like 1.7% and change because people are suddenly realizing what? You might actually get a little inflation in this economy when you're spending $1.9 trillion and the Fed isn't going to stop printing. I'm on it. Okay, I want to take a look at these markets because, wow, you know, the Fed, they don't want to move at all. I mean, they basically said that they're going to keep rates low for all of this year, all of next year, all of the following year, right through to 2024. So low, record low rates for 21, 22, 23. How about that? And not only that, they're going to continue their bond buying program. So what's an investor to think? Other than there's got to be some inflation at some point creeping up. You already saw Treasury yields go above 1.7% in Thursday's market. I would anticipate that that will continue, right? But if you get the Fed buying all those bonds, then that's going to act as a suppressant, if you would, on those interest rates. So you might start to see, yes, they creep up 1.7%, 1.8%, 2%. I do think there's going to be inflation somewhere. Now, we've already seen some evidence in food prices. Don't forget, in the month of February, 3.5% increase in grocery store food prices, 3.7% in restaurant prices. You also saw energy prices moving up, prices at the pump, in part because of the disastrous storm in Texas. All of these things are taking an effect. So what do you need to, you need to be invested in the markets. I mean, until the bubble gets ready to burst. I mean, I would argue we're kind of in an asset bubble right now when things are trading at 30 plus times earnings, but that will continue as long as the federal government is there printing money, as long as the Fed is there printing money. You have a lot of support, right, for these asset valuations. So one could anticipate that there will be more upside coming in these markets. That said, you want to think about how you invest. You want to be diversified right now in everything from equities, right? So you want to be in things that will capture that inflation, if you would. And, you know, people are looking for places to put their money, but you also want to be in hard assets. And that means things like real estate. That means things like gold and silver and gosh, palladium. Who knew? Palladium. Palladium prices are like on a tear. That's actually primarily because people are really worried about supply. There's a Russian miner that has a couple of key palladium mines in Siberia, and they've had some waterlogging issues. So that means supply is going to be restricted for the next couple of months. As such, you see the price of palladium going up and up and up, in part on this bet of an economic recovery. But the reason people like gold in inflationary times is because gold is really that inflation hedge, right? It's that one thing that over time, 4,000 years, has held its value. And so people look to that as a place to be. It's one of the reasons, too, people are looking at Bitcoin. They're thinking maybe this is the new gold. You know, we'll see about that. I think it's a very interesting space and a fascinating space. But gold has over time really stood for something and continued to hold some value. So gold is really interesting to look at. Silver, of course, has been on a tear recently, in part because the Reddit crowd is getting involved. But think about your portfolio. Really think about how you're going to manage these inflationary pressures, because I don't know if it's going to catch up with wages. I'd love actually if it did, right? You want wages to go up if there's inflation in the rest of the economy somehow, some way. I think we could kind of use a little wage inflation, given that things have been so stagnant for so long. That said, it's a tightrope, right? It's like the Fed is walking this really, really, really tight line, because if they get it wrong, then it could be hugely problematic. You think back to the 70s, right? You had low growth and lots of inflation, and poor Volcker's out there hiking interest rates over and over and over again, trying to keep a lid on things. So let's hope it doesn't get to that. I mean, in an ideal world, it doesn't, but nonetheless, I think it's really critical you remember that inflation is coming, and it can find itself into an economy in different ways. And that's one of the reasons why it's important to be invested in a very diverse portfolio where you will benefit from asset inflation while still keeping an eye on things, right? Like, I mean, if suddenly everybody starts pouring into bonds and treasuries and you start seeing those yields go higher and higher and higher and higher, then that actually could trigger a kind of breaking point in these markets. But I don't think we're here just yet. I think actually any downside you see, if you're in it for the long haul, you know, if you're investing for the next 20 years, it's a no-brainer, right? Because these are opportunities and you need to recognize those opportunities. I have more, including ways that you can invest, especially for first-time investors. Go to trishintel.com for more. You can sign up for my emails. You can get all your news there. Do make sure you download this podcast. Tell your friends. I'm here every single day with you, and we got lots to discuss. Talk to you tomorrow.